Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. On the phone today, we have David Bowman, the owner and head cider maker at Black Mountain Cider Works in Black Mountain, North Carolina. So, David, tell us about you, where you came from, how you got to be where you are today, and all about your organization there, Making Wonderful Cider.
My wife Jessica and I are both from North Carolina. I'm from Durham, and she's from Goldsboro. And we moved to Black Mountain about 4 years ago. We were hobbyist cider makers, brewers and vintners, who just found a good outlet with all the apples here. We didn't move here because of the apples, but once we were here, we ratcheted up our cider making and mead making to the point that we decided to, in August 2013, go all in and do it professionally, and that's when we opened up the cidery.
What got you interested in making cider in the first place?
I've been a home brewer, and Jessica had been making wines. It was just a hobby for us that gradually became an obsession. And again, we moved here, and there's all these wonderful apples in Hendersonville. And at the time, nobody was making cider with them. So we started making it in the driveway and the garage, and it just gradually, we'd give it away to friends and family who were positive and encouraging, and then we decided to go professional with it.
Okay, sounds like a hobby out of control.
Yeah, it became an obsession.
I got that way with making wine many years ago, so I understand the problem. Okay, so you've got your cider operations dot down there. What kinds of things would you have done differently, and what kinds of things do you think you did right in starting your business?
There were a lot of considerations. We didn't have a lot of financial backing when we started, so we're in kind of a small business park location, which is a little bit out of the way, although it's getting easier to find now. We would have obviously liked to have a downtown storefront, but we settled for this business park. But we've got a cozy little hub-like tasting room. It's comfortable and becoming more and more popular, and that's where you can find a lot of our smaller batch things. I think one thing we would have maybe done differently was that we would have emphasized the tasting room a bit more rather than just production, because we found that when we can talk with people and share them the ciders, we get a lot of great feedback, and it becomes a real community experience. And what we do right is, I think, we do it the hard way. We don't buy any juice. We buy all the apples. I know the orchard keepers myself. I go out there. We look at the apples, dicker and barter for good prices, and then we bring them back. We crush and press all our apples for the juice you make, so we have 100% control over what apples go in there, depending on what's available, what time of year it is, as the harvest changes from, say, August to November. I think doing small batches and fermenting everything ourselves, pressing everything ourselves, was the way to go, even though it is a bit harder, and it's limited our production, that we can only sell what we've pressed. But we have a good amount of control over it. So I'd say what we did right was not being as concerned about getting a million gallons of cider out there, as opposed to really doing the best we could and making really every batch to be a really superior batch, with a lot of care and a lot of practice.
Well, I know from my visits to a number of cideries over the years that apples are your raw material, of course, and it's key that you have good apples to really make good cider. Share with us, how do you go about finding the right kinds of apples and the right quantities of apples to do what you're doing?
One thing is that we have a very specific growing conditions in North Carolina. It's going to be different than, say, Michigan or Washington or New York. So our apples are going to have a little bit of higher acid, as well as a hotter growing season, which leads to a good amount of sugar, but a real bright acidity to them. The terroir of our apples is just as important as it is in wine. And it's going to change from August, when we can get the first ginger gold apples, which are very bright and acidic, but make a fine cider throughout the season until, by November, it's Arkansas Blacks and Wine Saps. And what we're looking for is the best representation of a combination of sugary and acidic apples to match what is available for the cider at that time. For instance, in August, I'm looking for some really good apples from the August period. That there's going to be different. There's going to be Mutsus, which are also called Crispins, and Ginger Golds are going to be the two predominant ones. And then as they get a little cooler, you're going to get your sugarier apples, and that's going to be your Wine Saps, your Macintosh, your Golden Delicious, Red Delicious, etc. So what I'm looking for is what's going to blend to the best. We don't use a particular one. It's not a one kind of cider. You don't generally have single varietals here. But we're looking for a combination of characteristics that's going to blend well into the type of cider we make.
I'm assuming now that you're using all North Carolina apples.
Oh, yes.
If someone were to follow you around in a truck, and what would be the longest distance that you go from your location to get apples in terms of miles or time?
Well, it's all pretty much to the same area. We buy all our apples in Hendersonville, and mostly from Lyda Farms, which is on Chimney Rock Road. So I guess depending on whether you go on 26 and 240 or Highway 9, it's going to be 20 to 25 miles.
You're really talking about local apples there for sure.
That's been a good plan for us because they're pretty thick with the orchards out there. But honestly, we wouldn't know how to do it otherwise. We're making cider here because of the apples. So yeah, I wouldn't even know how to do it otherwise.
Everybody knows that there's different types of apples come ripe at different times of the year, and they also have different chemical makeups and flavors and so forth. Do you have a different process that you use for different apples?
No, it's pretty much the same. A lot of washing, a lot of chopping, a lot of pressing. We do a lot of blending. We do pretty small batch. We'll ferment in half barrels to two-barrel batches. Depending on, again, what time it is, it's going to be a very different apple makeup, which we then blend to get our taste. There's a lot of range in the apples.
You say that, of course, different apple types, different varieties come ripe at different times of the year, so you sort of take into account when and how to schedule going out and making the pickups and all that. That's got to be some sort of an organizational challenge.
By the fall, we're so desperate for the fruit because it's been a long 7 or 8 months since we've had any, so it's pretty much our number one occupation is going to get the apples when we're not washing things. Sometimes they'll bring them to us, too. We order, say, if we're buying maybe 6 of them that week.
That's a nice thing to have them deliver apples to your place. That's good.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. Well, we go out. We'll take the truck out to pick up a single bin if I've gotten word that there's a really particular good batch of a type of apple I'm looking for. But otherwise, I'll buy them in bulk and they can deliver them sometimes.
Is there a big disparity in the prices you pay for different kinds of apples?
Oh, yes. Also, depending on how the harvest is, too. We've had a couple of pretty warm springs, but with a couple of frosts. And also, we had a really dry summer last year. So the apples this past harvest, 2015, were quite expensive. They were up to 40% more than they had the previous 2 years.
Okay, so that's just year to year, but within a year, a bin of apples of one variety costs less or more than another bin?
Yes, the early apples cost the most.
Do they?
Yeah, the Ginger Golds and Mutsus will cost the most. I think it's just because there's less of them, there's less orchard space devoted to the early apples. They're not as good as the apples that are going to come along later on. It's just The orchard keepers are as eager as we are to sell the apples because they rely almost solely on tourism.
Let's talk about the kinds of processing it used there. Are you making things in stainless steel and barrels and concrete tanks? What are you using for making your cider?
We use our chopper's a Zambelli. It's an Italian grape crusher. And we use two different kinds of presses. One's German and one's Slovenian, which is challenging when something breaks because my Slovenian is not very fluent. We have a couple of old whiskey barrels that we ferment in, but the bulk of our cider is fermented in food-grade plastic wine tanks.
When you start to process your apples, I know in the winemaking area we've got up to 200 different types of chemicals and additives and so forth that we can use as part of the recipe. Is it the sort of same thing with cider?
No, I use a little bit of sulfite to kill the wild yeast. If I'm not doing a log fermentation, sometimes we just let the juice go. And that can deliver some delightful little tart and sour flavors. We occasionally add a Brettanomyces, which is the, you know, what they use to make sour beers with.
Sure.
But largely, I just use sulfite at this point, and that's about it.
What kind of yeast do you use?
It varies. One thing that is unique to North Carolina is that it's very warm when we first begin fermenting. And when we were first becoming ciderists, a lot of the books and online recommend using champagne yeast. But we found that that's not ideal for a very warm fermentation that's going on in late August and early September. I find ale yeasts are particularly useful. They are used to fermenting dry and warm. They like a warm fermentation. And we'll leave it some nice buttery sort of terpenes and diacetyls. It's not a bone dry. It leaves a little bit of character behind. As it cools off, we move to different yeast, wine yeasts. But we use a lot of ale yeast.
A lot of ale yeast. That comes from your beer-making days.
Yeah, and just a lot of trial and error. We find that for what we're looking for, I have found that some yeast, champagne yeast particularly, likes a cold fermentation, but I find it can also kind of strip away some of the character of the cider.
We've been talking with David Bowman, the owner and head cider maker at Black Mountain Cider Works in Black Mountain, North Carolina. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back. Today's program is being brought to you by Carrie Caldwell's Bee Slapper. Those of us who live in log homes or have old barns are familiar with the annual onslaught of swarms of carpenter bees here in the mountains. Those suckers are about the size of a small hummingbird and can cause a lot of damage to your wooden buildings. For you city folks, carpenter bees bore a half-inch diameter holes into the wood to lay their eggs. Some holes have been measured to be over 12 inches deep. They keep coming back year after year, too, to lay their eggs. And they keep drilling new holes. They can totally destroy the ability of a timber to hold up a roof section if they are not controlled. Carrie Caldwell lives back in Spring Creek in an old log barn that she remodeled into a living space for her family. It's a great old classic tobacco barn that she fixed up. Carrie noticed the carpenter bees begin swarming in it around her barn early spring that year. Carrie tried plugging the holes with wooden dowels. The carpenter bees just ate through them, going in and out at will. She tried using expansion foam to fill the holes. After it dried, the bees kept drilling through that too. While doing some research on the problem at the Madison County Library, she read that each carpenter bee was responsible for laying up to 60 eggs each season. She reckoned if she could kill the carpenter bee, she would prevent that new crop from hatching. She didn't like chemicals or poisons, so she thought of another idea. She would swat them as they hovered just in front of their holes just before going in to build a nest. She made a thin wooden paddle and nailed it to a short piece of old broken broomstick. Now she could swat the bees as they flew into and out of the holes during the nesting season. It proved to be an effective way to kill the carpenter bees. She killed over 50 the first day. She figured that prevented 3,000 eggs from being laid. At the end of the season, she had racked up over 185 bees. Next season, there were substantially fewer carpenter bees flying around, but she swatted them anyway. After the third year, hardly a one could be seen. I had Carrie make one for me, and I found it works very well in reducing the carpenter bee population around our farm buildings, as well as our house. Carrie now has her kids making the bee slappers to sell to make some extra money for their school supplies. Carrie Caldwell's Bee Slapper is another fine product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County. You can buy Carrie Caldwell's Bee Slapper for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program. Welcome back, folks. We've been talking on the phone with David Bowman, who's the owner and head cider maker down at Black Mountain Cider Works here in Black Mountain, North Carolina. So, David, just before the break, you had mentioned something about blends, and I'm sort of curious about how you determine which blends to use, how you go about tasting and getting the right recipe for what you're doing.
We do a lot of blending. As I said, we're pretty small batch, so a lot of our cider is based on what apples are better that harvest, and that's going to lead to a lot of different characteristics between the apples, both their chemical makeup and just their flavor, their pressability, how easily they render up their juice. And one of the things that's been a challenge when you work with this sort of process is that you're looking for a type of consistency that can be elusive. Unlike, say, a brewer who's going to buy barley that all comes from Canada or hops that come from the same hop farms. Our apples are really what really grew well that season, that year. And we try for balance, most importantly, with our cider. Most of the commercial ciders we find are far too sweet to a cloying and insipid level. For a real cider, you're really looking for a balance. And to do that, you can't stick with just one formula. You have to use all your senses to blend and to get that proper aroma and body and finish and everything that incorporates a good cider, all the while keeping the alcohol level consistent as well.
Who actually does the tasting there? Is that something you do by yourself, or do you have a panel of people who help you?
It's my wife and partner, Jessica, and me. We taste it almost constantly.
In the tasting process, a lot of people here in the mountains, I know we have run into this in the winemaking end of things where I'm primarily involved, is that most people here in the United States have been historically been beer drinkers, and they don't have the taste buds developed yet in order to be able to do some serious evaluation. And consequently, with the French Broad Vignerons, we've had to go through and develop special judge training or wine evaluation classes to teach people how their nose works, how their tongue works, and the difference between the different kinds of faults that you would find in the various types of beverages. So it's a real problem. And you seem to be blessed with the ability to do that, and you can do your own tasting, and you and your wife. So do you ever have a little argument about what you think is better tasting than she does, or vice versa?
Well, we definitely both have strong opinions about what we want the cider to be doing. In general, we are in pretty simpatico when it comes to what our tastes are. But there's definitely times one of us will be more enthusiastic or less about a particular cider that we've made. In general, there's a certain amount of competition that goes in that, but we jokingly refer to it as co-opetition, where we push each other. But also, we've opened a pretty good wide door that there's a lot of possibilities there. We have one of our mottos is ferment it all, and that kind of applies to fermenting everything we can get locally. We add, for, say, local strawberries, or we've been working on pawpaws this past year, which is a fun thing to ferment. We both came from rural stock where it was just a given that you made your own wine out of whatever you had. My family's from farther down east, but I was well acquainted with dandelion wines and strawberry wines, as well as muscadines and scuppernongs that my uncles made off the farm. And there was just it wasn't a back-to-the-basics sort of approach. It was just how things were done, is that you fermented whatever was available to you. And that's led us to have a pretty good variety of ranges when it comes to our ciders and meads.
Well, I noticed at the Cider Fest this past season, you had two ciders down there. One was called Pomona. I'm trying to remember. I think that was sort of a semi-dry.
Yes.
And you had another one called Scarecrow that I seem to remember was made with honey and something else. I don't remember what the other something else was. How do you come up with those combinations?
A lot of experimentation. Yeah, the Scarecrow's a fall seasonal we do that. We have a chai or masala spice blend that the Dobra Tea Shop in town uses to mull our apple juice. We sell them a little apple juice throughout the fall, and they mull it with this particular spice blend that's their own chai tea blend. And we just figured, hey, it was really good in the mulled apple juice. Let's try it in cider, and it turned out pleasing.
Well, you've used a term there that a lot of our radio listeners may not understand when you say mull. How about explaining that for us?
Mulling is just the simple addition of spices or fruits to either wine or beer or cider, and it's warmed a little bit, not enough that you would lose the alcohol, of course, but it's basically a warmed punch made out of wine or beer or cider that is added spices or fruits to. It tends to be a little sweeter. It tends to be for winter time. To go, you know, in the Christmas markets in Europe, it's quite popular as it is farther up north.
Sure. Well, mulled cider is one of my favorite winter drinks, so I know what that is and what that tastes like, but I just want to make sure our listeners had an opportunity to learn something from you on that.
Our blend is a little bit of ginger, a little bit of clove, a few other things, orange peel, cardamom, and cinnamon.
Well, you're really getting into that spice end of things, aren't you?
One of the benefits of being small is that we have a tight grip on the ciders.
For purposes of education to our radio audience about the kinds of things you do, why don't you talk about the specific labels and names of the kind of ciders that you presently have available and where we can find them?
Pomona is our flagship cider. That's semi-dry, medium-bodied, pretty rich. It's what I call my drinking cider. It was basically the first recipe I kind of honed, and I would say perfected, but at least quantified specifically when I was just a home ciderist. The Zephyrus is our spring cider that we're actually releasing on March 18th, and that's got some fresh ginger and candied orange peel. And that's semi-dry as well, but it's got a little bit of heat on it, also slightly sweeter. Right now we're serving a mead called Cortez that's made with some cold brewed coffee from the Dynamite Coffee Roasters and some local honey. And the cold brew, the coffee, gives it a nice aroma and flavor of coffee without the bitterness that you might associate with, say, a coffee stout. The smoothness of the honey really blends well with the notes in their cold brewed coffee. We do a lavender cider called Good Queen Bess. We have a Viking Blood, which is a traditional style of mead that we make a cider and mead blend that is then aged in a bourbon barrel made with some local tart and sweet cherries and fermented in a wild turkey barrel. Most of these are going to be available in our tasting room, which is on Eastside Drive in Black Mountain. It's in the same business park as Pisgah Brewery, if you're familiar with Black Mountain. We also sell 22-ounce bottles out in most of the bottle shops around here, as well as in Greensboro and a couple in Charlotte. Looking to expand it to the Triangle, but we'll sell the Pomona, Zephyrus, and one we call the Saxon, which is our homage to a Frankfurt-style apple wine. And that's just a very dry cider with no ornament at all. It's a really good version of just a natural country-style cider with nothing sweetening added or flavor added back to it. And we sell those three, and we have a lemongrass-flavored cider called the Dreadnought that we'll be selling out this year as well. And you can find those in 22-ounce bottles in most bottle shops.
Okay, nothing in the grocery stores?
No, as of yet, no.
You mentioned your place over there. I didn't hear an address. If somebody were to start looking for you and trying to find you, what address would they be looking for?
It's 104 Eastside Drive, 307 in Black Mountain, North Carolina. It's around back of the business park if you go around the brewery.
You have a tasting room there, and what are the hours of your tasting room?
Wednesday and Thursday, we're open 3 to 8, and then Friday and Saturday, we're open 1 to 8, and then Sunday, 1 to 5. We'll be expanding to 6 o'clock on Sundays during the summer and until 9 o'clock during the week. We'll close Mondays and Tuesdays as of right now.
You have any other activities that goes on at your location there?
So we have had a couple of parties there. We've had their birthday parties there. But no, it's more of a pub-like atmosphere than, say, a vineyard.
Do you have some little nibblies of some kind that goes along with your cider?
Yeah, we sell some chips, a range of chips, and also some jerky from the... We have a few different cured meats from the Victory Nut Gap. And some cheese from Looking Glass Creamery.
Okay, some good local products there.
Anything that's going to go well with cider is going to be anything, cheeses and meats especially, anything with a bit of a sort of fattiness to it. The edge of the cider can cut through it really nicely. Cider pairs very well with pork as well as cheeses.
Nice to know. If somebody's looking for you on the line, you got social media, website, phone number, email address?
Yeah, we're quite active on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, all the things the kids do. My wife handles a lot of that. She's very active. We post daily, keeping people up to date on what's going on. New releases, whether we're going to have a release party at the place and where you can find it. Also, our hours are listed as well as a phone number and email.
Our radio audience reach right now through WART is in the Madison County area. We reach all the way down into Asheville. Are there any places in Asheville that we could go buy your products?
You can get it at Brews and Ales and the Appalachian Vintner have our ciders. We sell in a few different restaurants periodically. We're often at the Thirsty Monk, all three locations.
Nice.
And the Auditorium, which is out in West Asheville.
We love to see local brews being served in the establishments here. We're working very hard to change that, as you know. Get more and more local wines and beers and meads and so forth served in the restaurants.
Sure. Yeah, we are somewhat limited by our size. So we have a couple of restaurants in Black Mountain that always have our cider on tap. And that's the Trailhead and the Mill Pizzeria. You can find a lot of different varieties, as well as our meads on tap at our cider works. The tasting room.
David, we've learned a lot of information about your operation today. The one thing I haven't heard yet is roughly what is your capacity in terms of bottles or cases a year that you're producing right now?
Bottling's a really a small part of our inventory throughout the year. It's mostly on draft, on kegs.
Oh.
We did about 3,000 to 4,000 gallons this year. Cider and then maybe 500 gallons of mead.
We've been talking with David Bowman, who's the owner and head cider maker at Black Mountain Cider Works in Black Mountain, North Carolina. Hope everybody has a chance to come out your way, David, and sample some of your wares and enjoy some of the locally made cider here in Western North Carolina.
Yeah, come on down. We'll fill you up.
Dave, we certainly appreciate your taking time to be with us today, and we're looking forward to tasting some of your goods.
Yeah, please do. Thanks a lot, Chuck.
You're certainly welcome. Okay, folks, we'll call that a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Addison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!